It's the 1st of August, Monday. Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you. If you're just tuning in, we've just seen, in fact, we're watching the medal ceremony now in the studio here. The Aussie women have won gold in the rugby sevens, an outstanding performance beating Fiji 22-7 in their gold medal match this morning. The Aussie women in the 4x200m freestyle as well have romped home to win the gold medal in that this morning, and we're well and truly on top of the medal tally at this stage. Yesterday in the NRL, it was the Bulldogs beating Newcastle 24-10, and then the Cowboys went to Cogra, where they haven't won in almost two decades, and won 34-8 against the St. George Illawarra Dragons. Yesterday in the AFL, Richmond Lots came from 42 points down to beat Brisbane by 7 points at the MCG. Now, that was the Lions' 11th straight loss at the MCG. They haven't won there for 8 years. So, real questions about their premiership credentials at the moment. But that result was a great result for the Swans, who were now in fourth spot on percentage after a 73-point win over GWS Saturday at the SCG. So, they're very much right back in premiership calculations now, though Geelong and Melbourne setting the standard still.
Well, they can control their own destiny, the Swans. And I think, yeah, while you need to finish top four, I think it's not impossible to win outside the top four, because we've seen that in the past with the Bulldogs, and the Bulldogs not only won a grand final, they made the grand final last year from outside the top four. And they do have that week off,
it's huge, you know,
which is a huge advantage for those teams that don't make top four. Because you can get your players back on the field, they're all rested, and then you make a run for it, and you only have to win those four games. So I think with the system the way it is in the AFL, you're a lot better chance of winning it than what you are in the NRL, finishing outside the top four. But the Swans have shown they can match it with anyone. But Geelong at the moment, they're just very impressive, along with Melbourne. Melbourne have been up and down, but Geelong, they're a team that have never really tanked, have they? They've always been there or thereabouts. Although under Scott, they've only won the one comp. Mm. But a lot of people thought they'd win another one or two since he's been there. But, you know, Collingwood have been a real surprise packet this season. You know, they've won a number of games by close margins.
Another one on the weekend. Yeah. 6 points.
Against Port Adelaide. Unbelievable.
I think, what, 10-match winning streak, and I think 7 of those games have been by 8 points or less.
He's done a great job. Yeah. McRae, the coach, but Fremantle are starting to lose their way a little bit. The record of the MCG against the Brisbane Lions, it's not a good record to have when you know that the big games are played down there. So, you know, they're outside the top four at the moment. Carlton fell away on the weekend. You've got Richmond sitting there, Western Bulldogs there, St Kilda there. You'd highly unlikely the Gold Coast Suns, even though they won yesterday against West Coast, will make the finals, although there's still a mathematical chance. But it's very open, the AFL this year.
Morning, Buzz.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I didn't know you were such an AFL expert, Buzz.
Yeah. I'm not an AFL expert, Buzz, but I do follow it. I do follow the AFL.
Riverina boy.
Yeah, Riverina boy, mate. It's hard to not follow the AFL when there's so many players from the Riverina that play in the AFL.
Yeah, very strong in that area, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And hopefully rugby league can, you know, keep doing the battle down that way, because, you know, we're always sort of struggling for AFL. They're sort of encroaching into a lot of areas there that have been rugby league territory for years. So hopefully rugby league can, you know, make sure we stay strong in those areas.
Can't beat NRL though, mate.
No, that's exactly right, Buzz. I'll tell you what, we had some good games on the weekend. But I want to touch on Manly and the players in particular having this meeting yesterday without the coaches or anyone from the front office present.
Yeah, well, the club brought in a professional mediator to get the group of players together to try and get a sort of sympathetic understanding from both sides. I don't think they're ever going to agree on the fact that the players did the right thing by withdrawing from the match last week. But what they want is for the players who did play to get a better understanding of why they did it. And that's why everything was put on the table yesterday. And there were discussions. I was told late last week that the rift amongst the players in the team was basically it was not reversible. It was it was quite deep, and the boys that did play and played very bravely against the Roosters could not comprehend why their teammates took such drastic action. I think after they got together yesterday, there is a better understanding. I still think there's a very, very long way to go, though, before it is completely sorted out to a satisfactory position where they're prepared to, like all other NRL clubs or the great clubs, to have full team camaraderie and strength and spirit. And so Manly, I think you could call it an uneasy truce between the players. I look at their home run. They've got Parramatta at home. Then they've got the Titans away, Sharks at home, then Raiders and Bulldogs to finish up. And what are they on? They're on 20 competition points. They're now in 10th spot. I'm not sure they can now make the finals. They don't have a good for and against, even if they were to get themselves level with Canberra and the Roosters. I heard you talking earlier that the new chief executive starts today. He's a good operator, but he's walking into a really, really difficult position. As I said, I think it's an uneasy truce. But you know what? We're going to get a better idea when they host Parramatta next weekend.
On the Knights, and well, we've got a text here from Ados Heroes. The Knights faithful, like myself, still turning up for some reason, despite the lacklustre performance. Villain, the Knights, what's doing? They should not be where they are. Peter Parr's notepad would have been chockers with changes to be made. Are they in crisis, Buzz?
Oh, I think they're next door to a crisis. I really do. I tell you what, I've been really disappointed, and I'll come back to the coach in a second. I think their recruitment the last 12 months has been absolutely terrible. You look at the three-try winger, Jacob Carras, yesterday. They could not recognise that he was going to be an NRL player, and he took himself off to the Bulldogs on $100,000. The other really, really impressive young player who worked on a building site in Newcastle last year because he couldn't get a crack at the Knights, their top 30, was Zach Hosking, who has been unbelievably impressive with the Broncos in the couple of weeks that he got a shot during Origin. And then you think about the money they spent on, you know, Dane Gagai, who I think it was a three-year contract on really big money, Jake Clifford, their halfback, on really big money. So they bought these guys in on big, but haven't looked after their kids in the area. And I think that is one thing that Peter Parr, who has a reputation in the Cowboys for bringing through their best young kids, and you can see the ones they had on the football field all year and against St George yesterday. It's a huge job. They've got to get that pathways fixed and hang on to their best young players. Now, as for Adam O'Brien, I think he is under pressure. I think he will hold on for the time being. But I think the first 6 to 8 weeks of next year's competition will get a determination on his future. I was really disappointed in one of his quotes yesterday. He said after the game, well, I've been in 4 grand finals. That was an assistant coach. He's basically saying, I'm not the problem. And when you're a team, and I think it's one in, all in, you don't start playing blame games like that. I just thought it was a silly thing to say. And you know, they've been terrible in recent weeks. And their roster is better than where they are on the competition ladder, is what I'm trying to say. I think Peter Parr's got the, you know, Phil Gould's come in and done a great job at Canterbury. Can Peter Parr do that? He's going to have to do what Gus has done at Canterbury.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Buzz. I think that he's got a big job.
What did you think of his comment?
Well, it shows you that he's under pressure because he's got to reinforce to people that he's the right man for the position. So obviously he feels under pressure. And he's telling the media that, hey, I've done this apprenticeship. I've been a part of 4 grand finals as an assistant. I know what I'm doing. I've got all this information. And you're right. The players just aren't buying in. The problem with that is you leave yourself open for questions that are, well, why aren't they buying in? Why aren't they doing what you want them to do? If you're teaching them, you've got good communication, what is it that's stopping them from taking it from training out on the field? So they'll need to have improvement over the coming weeks, because my big fear, Buzz, for Newcastle and Adam O'Brien is if they finish the season off very, very poorly and they're on the end of some big scorelines, well, they might have to make a decision to part ways with the coach. But I think it, you know, when one text I received early this morning, I didn't get to, but it said, well, why can't you get rid of him? And because I said, well, he's made the finals the last 2 years. I think that buys him a little bit of time. But again, we keep coming back to it's the way you lose as well. And the frustration up there in Newcastle, and the drums are beating louder and louder as every week goes by with every poor performance.
Look, I've done a piece this morning in the column about Cameron Serraldo, and I've got no question whatsoever he's going to be a very good coach because he was a very good assistant. He's come from the Penrith Juniors. But just because you've been a great assistant coach doesn't guarantee you're going to be a great head coach. And I used two examples there out of the Penrith system, where Trent Barrett, after coaching at Manly, went back to Penrith. Really, you know, the Panthers were outstanding while he was helping out Ivan Cleary. Then he went to Canterbury and had a, 13% win record. Garth Brennan was supposed to be the great assistant coach at Penrith, probably was. He went to the Titans, one of the tougher jobs in rugby league, but couldn't get results. I think he had a 30% win record, didn't last two seasons. So what Adam O'Brien was talking himself up yesterday, you know, just because you've come out of a good system doesn't guarantee you've got what it takes. And some guys are good assistant coaches and some guys are good head coaches. I hope they do give him a bit more time the rest of this season and a rebuild alongside Peter Parr. But geez, Loz, to let guys like Hosking and Karaz go, who weren't even on $100,000. They've got to sort the pathways out. Well, you know what a heartland the Knights is.
You want them to be successful, Newcastle. And I think Craig Fitzgibbon has shown everyone that as an assistant, you just don't jump into the first opportunity that's presented. You've got to weigh up a lot of things. And, you know, I think if you're going to be a head coach, you're looking at the front office, you're looking to see stability and financial stability as well. You're looking at the playing group, you know, what have they actually got now and where do we go into the future with this group and how much improvement can I put on this group, and salary cap and all list management comes into play. So your recruitment, your retention, what type of juniors you have and what footy program you can offer as a coach. I just don't think you jump straight in. And I think Fitzy's done it remarkably well at the Sharks. He's weighed it all up and thought, yep, that's the best place for me. And you speak about Newcastle, Buzz, and you're right. Like, it's all about the recruitment, but it's all about Newcastle want to follow their own too. They want, and they believe they've got the best, you know, one of the best junior programs in the country, and they should have one of the best junior rugby league programs in the country as well, because it's a real rugby league heartland. So you've got to be getting that recruitment right.
The difference between O'Brien and Craig Fitzgibbon is that Craig Fitzgibbon had many, many offers over, but he was under contract with the Roosters and would not break that handshake he had with Nick Politis and Trent Robinson. Whereas Adam O'Brien joined the Roosters from Storm on a 3-year contract. Bruce has won a premiership, and then he got the Knights offer and broke his contract. He didn't have he wasn't prepared, like Serraldo has and like Fitzgibbon has, to play the patient game. But look, as I said, the game needs a strong Newcastle Knights, and I hope they can sort it out.
What have you made of the Bulldogs' sort of revival under Mick Potter? And, you know, they got a couple of good signings for next year, and if on the back of Serraldo going there, you'd be quite excited if you're a Bulldogs fan at this stage.
Oh, absolutely. Not just Cameron Serraldo, but the quality of the players they've been able to sign. You know, they've got the Parramatta Reels,
Marnie.
And the Penrith Panthers, Billy Kickhow, going there. I've written a story this morning that they picked up Andrew Davey from the Manly Seagulls. He's been one of Manly's better forwards this year. Good signing. They've also got big Frank the Tank Pele from Cronulla. He's a 21-year-old. He weighs more than 100 kilos. He's a powerhouse. A lot of our listeners have probably seen play for the Newtown Jets. He's got to work on his fitness and his engine. He's got to get more game time, but he's a terrific signing. And Cronulla weren't prepared to compete for the money the Bulldogs had offered him. But look, you've got to concede, since Trent Barrett went, and that was obviously the right decision for Baz to be moved on, and Phil Gould got that one right. Mick Potter has just done a sensational job. I love turning the television on because I love the style of football they play whenever they run out. I think one guy who hasn't had a rap and he's one of the most criticised players in the comp, I think Kyle Flanagan, has finally settled into that halfback role, and he's steering them around the park really nicely. Good on them. It's good for the game, but there's one less easy beat in the competition. When you turn up to play Canterbury, it's like you're turning up to play a top eight contender.
What have you made of some of the, charge sheets from the match review over the weekend?
I can't work them out, Middo, can you?
It's pretty inconsistent, to say the least.
Oh, I did it my low light this morning. A gouge last weekend wasn't a gouge this weekend. An elbow to the head on Thursday night with Barua Hargreaves, which the match review committee picked up, wasn't the next night. Wasn't an elbow to the head with Nelson the Sofa Solomona on Wade Egan. And there was a Josh King gouging suggestion too over in New Zealand, which I thought they'd probably... It's almost like it's so inconsistent that they have three or four different people on duty on different nights who don't read foul play the same as each other. And it's not right. They had one obvious decision over the weekend, which was the Cleary tackle, and Patrick, two obvious situations, and the Patrick Carrigan situation, that really, really unfortunate injury to Jackson Hastings. But as I keep arguing with Paul Kent on that, on NRL 3, all I want is consistency. That's all fans want. Of the 16 clubs, they want their players to be treated the same. Mm. And for the life of me, I can't work out why there wasn't some sort of action taken over what happened with the Melbourne Storm players.
Yeah, I think you're right, Buzz. I think we're sitting here today scratching our heads going, well, if what happened last week... Players got fined, players got suspended. Why wouldn't that happen in that Melbourne game when you sort of looked at it and thought, well, they were sort of two similar incidents? And I think they're very lucky, both King and Nelson, that they at least didn't face a 1 or 2 week suspension on the sideline. But I'm sure we'll hear plenty more about this in the next couple of days, because I'm sure you'll be debating it tonight on NRL 360. But I want to talk to you too, mate, about the Titans. Holbrook again in the spotlight. But what are they doing recruitment-wise? And I read an article on the weekend that Sam Verrills possibly could be heading there.
Yeah, look, I spoke to a couple of people who look after Sam Verrills, and I spoke to the Roosters. I think this is a really unfortunate story in that the Brandon Smith signing has basically forced Sam Verrills out of the club. And I hope Brandon Smith's going to justify that and play better football when he does get to the Roosters, because Sam Verrills has done a really, really good job in the Roosters' revival over the last few weeks. Look, he's had a lot of injuries the last couple of years, but you're right. He's deep into talks with the Gold Coast Titans. He would obviously add tremendous experience to their spine with Kieran Foran to play 5'8", and that's one of the biggest problems the Titans have had this year. Absolutely no experience in those positions. So it would be a huge signing for the Titans. The only thing I'm hearing at the last minute is that St George Illawarra might come in with an offer. There's got to be question marks about Andrew McCulloch and how long he can keep going in the NRL. A wonderful player over a very long period of time. But is he still up to the speed of some of the really good hookers in the NRL? I'm not too sure, and I'm not surprised they're looking at Sam Bells as possibly coming in late with a decent offer. And I hope Bells does well at his new club, because I think he's a better player than the way he's been handled at the Roosters.
Yeah, he's a good player, isn't he? He's a very, very good player, Sam Verrills, and I'm sure whoever picks him up will pick up an exciting young number nine into the future.
No, he is, mate. He is. And it's good to see the Roosters playing the way they have the last few weeks. They weren't overly impressive against Manly the other night, but I'm looking forward to that last game of the year. New stadium. Sydney Roosters v the South Sydney Rabbitohs, and where they're positioned on the ladder, I think it's going to have bearing on the finals. I think Canberra Raiders can keep winning and try and force their way into the top eight. So we've really got an exciting 5 weeks coming up.
Thanks so much, Buzz. Enjoy the week.
Good on you guys. Thank you.
Tony Finau is about to close out the Rocket Mortgage Classic on the PGA Tour. He is five shots clear on the 18th hole, ahead of Patrick Cantlay, Cameron Young, and Canadian Taylor Pendrith, all five shots back. Best of the Aussies was Cam Davis, finished 15 under par for the tournament. Jason Day, 14 under, but Finau's going to win again. Back-to-back victories for him. Now, in the Commonwealth Games this morning, gold for Australia's women in the 4x200m freestyle, and also in the sevens as well. Charlotte Kaslik and her side just too good for Fiji, 22-7. So they've won the gold medal after they had a heart-stopping win against New Zealand in the semi-finals. Unfortunately, the Aussie men got beaten by New Zealand in the playoff for third and for bronze there this morning. In the Formula One overnight, Max Verstappen for Red Bull, after starting 10th on the grid, still managed to win the Hungarian Grand Prix. Mercedes drivers Lewis Hamilton and George Russell filled the podium. Daniel Ricciardo was 15th. Lando Norris, his teammate, finished 7th. So an unhappy outing for Daniel Ricciardo. But Verstappen's now 80 points clear in the Drivers' Championship. Yesterday, Shane Van Gisbergen had back-to-back wins in Adelaide in the supercars. He's edging closer to a third driver's title. The race had to be stopped for 30 minutes after a crash just after the start in the first race, and Andrew Heimgartner and Thomas Randall were then taken to hospital as a precaution. There's been some really sad news overnight in the States. Boston Celtics legend Bill Russell has died aged 88, and one of the greats of the NBA. His career stretched from 1956 to 1969 in that period. 12 NBA Finals appearances. He won 11, including 8 in a row. And the NBA Finals MVP trophy is named after the great Bill Russell. On the court, Matthew Dellavedova is also heading back to the NBA. Some news over the weekend. He signed a one-year deal with the Sacramento Kings. The Kings haven't made the playoffs for 16 seasons. But great for Delly to be back in the NBA. Give us a call, 1353 53. Send us a text, 0419 767 272. And Loz, just when I thought that praise would be just flowing this morning after the multi successes, I've come across this one from Tiger Marty, who says hero Laurie Daly for turning the Tigers' form around by having the Tigers to lose 13 plus in Loz's lock the last 2 weeks. The old kiss of death has turned them into a completely different team. Villain politics in sport leaves sport for the contest that is supposed to be. The Manly furore on Thursday completely overshadowed women in league round, says Tiger Marty. Tiger Marty mustn't have seen the racing multi-success.
No, well, you win one, you lose one, Mido, so I can understand his frustration. But if I'm the mock, all right, I'm going to tip the Tigers this weekend, and we'll see whether I'm the mock or not.
Who do they play this weekend?
They're playing Newcastle at home. If they can't win this, the West Tigers, it's a fluke. That's what's happened to them over the last 2 weeks. All right. After going to Townsville, should have won that game. Brisbane, they won that game convincingly. They should be beating Newcastle this weekend. They should be beating Newcastle this weekend.
Absolutely.
So they should be a lock. There you go. I'm going to put them in. Oh, no. You know what? I'm not going to put them in as a lock. I can't trust them yet.
I don't know, third time lucky. I reckon you'll be right with them this weekend. No, Newcastle.
You can't trust the West Tigers. You're talking about they're in 15th position.
I suppose Jackson Hastings now out for the season as well. It's a shame for them after the hip.
But their last 2 weeks, they've played some really good footy, the Tigers. They've played really well.
Yeah. Adam Dewey played really well yesterday. On Saturday night, didn't he?
So did Jock Madden.
Yeah, Jock Madden.
Yeah, their forwards are doing a really good job. Exciting times for Tigers. But again, they got nothing to play for as well, other than trying to avoid being last. But there are a couple of games in front of the Titans. But, you know, that freedom to play a bit of footy, to go out there and just enjoy it, it's probably suiting them.
I wanted to read this one out as well on Heroes and Villains. Hero Robbie Dolan and his partner Christine, whose baby was born 15 weeks premature in April, finally got to take his baby daughter home after 3 months in intensive care. Not widely known, but a tough time for all involved with a great ending. Yep, good call out. Villains already mentioned, but these players, Solomona and Hargreaves, who continue to push the envelope with foul play, in this instance, elbow to the head of a player lying helpless on the ground. Both players are repeat offenders and seemingly getting away with it. Cheers, Al. And give us a call, 1353-53. Bass, morning to you.
Morning, boys. I've rung about the Tigers, but Laurie, just quickly.
Yes, mate.
I love how you make a point and then use examples that don't justify your point.
Well, what is it, Bass? Tell me.
Well,
you're the expert on everything. Come on, let me know.
I'm just an expert at picking your crap. Anyway.
Well, I'm the expert at listening to your crap. That's so go, fire ahead. Now go, tell me.
What would your show be without people like us ringing?
I love people like you ringing. I just hate how you pick up examples all the time. It frustrates me.
Well, Laurie, you can't turn around and say the coaching fortunes of a coach in the NRL can turn so quickly and look at Brad Arthur. A couple of weeks ago, they were asking for his head. Brad Arthur beat a Penrith side with 13 men for 60 minutes, minus the greatest player in the game. Don't use that one as an example, Laurie.
Oh, when did I say... What have I said, though, Bass? What have I said? I've been on Parramatta all year because I think they can win the competition.
I'm not arguing that. I think Parramatta has a side to win the comp. But you can't say that was a great coaching performance on the weekend by Brad Arthur. He beat a 12-man squad minus the best player in the game. You can't use that game as a showpiece for their credentials.
I don't know whether I said a great coaching performance, did I?
No, you said how quickly a coaches can turn how coaches.
They can. They can turn their fortunes around pretty quickly. I thought Parramatta on the weekend, and again Nathan Cleary left the field or got sent from the field. I thought Parramatta played well in the first half. Second half, they were a bit scratchy. But
I thought the second half the referee did his best to make sure it wasn't a blowout. He killed off Parramatta's momentum. Couldn't get a roll on. Same thing with the Roosters game on the weekend. Like, the Roosters should have put away Manly by plenty.
I'll tell you what happened with the Roosters. I think they just thought they were going to win and they tried to throw it out there, you know, where. And they just kept making blues and Manly hung on. I think if you're the Roosters, you're just happy you get out of there with 2 points, aren't you?
Correct. But did you see the leeway the referee extended Manly in the ruck?
Oh, no, I can't say I noticed it, mate.
Manly was hanging on like they were clinging to the end of the Titanic, please. but boys, the Tigers.
Yep.
There is a common denominator with Tigers' fortunes when they're playing well. And that common denominator is Adam Dewey. You need to show Luke Brooks the highway and say, go on and march him out of town. That guy's got more lives than a cat. Actually, a barnyard full of cats. Mate, the Tigers are far better served with him and Jackson Hastings in the halves. Jackson Hastings is wasted at lock. He's not going to run the ball up and give you a hard hit up. So you may as well get a lock in there and play Dewey and Hastings in the halves, and the Tigers will be a lot better served. And Luke Brooks needs to maybe go play in, I don't know.
I think Luke Brooks is a good player, but I think Luke Brooks' time at the Tigers could be up. I think when you see what Jock Madden in limited opportunities has done, he probably deserves a shot there. I hate being critical of Luke Brooks because I think he's a really good player, but it just hasn't worked. It hasn't worked at the Tigers for whatever reason, whether it's coaching, player turnover, instability in the halves. There's been no connection there for him. It might be he might be best suited to walking, just get having a fresh start. Dewey's a really good player. Dewey's a very, very good player. And if he continues the way he's going, he should be playing rep football in the next year or two. But, you know, the last couple of weeks, they've been more committed as a team. And I don't know whether it's just a relief that the season is coming to an end and they're just starting to enjoy their footy or whatever it is. I don't know. I don't know with the West Tigers. I don't watch them that closely. But what I have seen from them is they're a far more committed side the last couple of weeks. And they've tried really hard. Now, I don't know whether that's because they now know who the coaching setup or what the coaching setup will be in the next couple of years with Sheens and Benji Marshall being there. And they're trying to impress their new coaches. I don't know. I don't know whether it's the influence of Brett Camorley or the players just sick of losing. But they've turned themselves around in 2 weeks. They look as though they're a team that's playing together and they're improved. But again, you've got to do it now for the rest of the season and then come into next year excited to do well.
Good on you, Bass. Morning, Dave.
How are we doing?
Nah, not too bad. Thanks, mate. What have you got for us this Monday?
Yeah, I just want to say I love the show. Love listening to you.
No, so, appreciate it, mate.
Yeah. I was just wondering about the early plea with a tackle like Cleary on Friday night. Do you think there should be an early plea or do you think it should be just a straight suspension?
I think he could have, tried to get a downgrade, and I think he's now put in the early plea of being guilty and accepted the grade 3 dangerous tackle charge. So he's definitely out for the 5 weeks. He possibly could have argued that there was mitigating circumstances because I think it was Liam Martin involved in the tackle over the top. But once he lifted and once he had the second go at him and put his arm under his legs and lifted and went through with it, he was always going to be in danger. Dylan Brown and Nathan Cleary knew straight away that he was in trouble and admitted it straight away. So do you? What are you trying to say here, Dave? You think that Cleary should have what?
I think there should be no early plea. My 4-year-old son at home knows he's guilty, and if that player was seriously injured, would the penalty be more? Would you think?
Well, if I think they offer the early plea, so you weigh it up whether to challenge or not. Because if he challenged at the judiciary and was unsuccessful, he would have received a 6-week penalty. So basically they've said to him, we've given you 5, but if you want to challenge it and you are unsuccessful, then you run the risk of getting an extra week put on top of that suspension. So I think it's not a bad system to have. Otherwise, you know, you've got players there that just say, well, I'll go and challenge that. And there's no other penalty, knowing that you can just roll the dice. But if you roll the dice and they can give you another week or two, you think seriously about, you know, accepting the guilty plea. And I don't think Penrith looked at that tackle and probably thought, well, you know what, 5 weeks to go between now and the end of the year. We'll give Nathan the rest of the year off.
He'll be the poster boy of the finals.
Well, he may well be. But again, it was a tackle that we didn't need to see. It's a dangerous tackle. He puts him in a bad position. He put his hand up. He said that it was the wrong thing to do. It was a dumb mistake. Hopefully he learns from that, which I'm sure he will. But those type of tackles we need to eliminate from the game because they can seriously go wrong. And when they go wrong, we might see someone end up in a serious way.
We've got Ali Mosley coming up shortly from Sky Racing to break down the weekend's racing there at Rosehill Gardens. The new racing season starts, in earnest, this week, 1st of August today. So the horse's birthday, Ali Mosley, is joining us now. Morning, Ali.
Oh, good morning, team. How you going?
Yeah, really well, thanks. And Crosstalk, outstanding performance in the Winter Challenge. What do you think's next for it?
It just set up so well, didn't it? I think, you try and look sometimes for winners outside of the favourites, but on Saturday it was just all about Crosstalk and great for John Van Overmeer as well to get to sit on some nice horses. He had a great season too. He's one of the jockeys who sometimes flies under the radar when we talk about the J-Max. of the world. So great for Jean Van Overmeer, but certainly will step out, I'd imagine, further. And I think he's a really progressive galloper now. I think officially a 5-year-old as of today, and obviously from the stable will no doubt just be fitter for the run. And I just can't wait to see what he can do this prep, as a few of them did. I think I had a chat to actually Teresa Bate up before the race about Monegal, who's one of my favourite horses. I just think she's such a little sweetheart. And Teresa said her partner rides her track work and has since she was a yearling, and she hadn't felt better than she had on that day. So she went super, I thought. She was fifth. I'm not sure if she'll push on. She's been up quite a long time, but I love that little mare. She's such a lovely girl. And Charlize, I thought, was a little bit disappointing. I thought she might run a better race, but I think there were lots of progressive horses that stepped out on Saturday that we can follow.
Was one of them Shades of Rose? She's starting to have an impressive record at the moment. Well, she's had 6 starts for 4 wins.
Yeah, that was a great fill-up for the punters. I think half of Australia was on Shades of Rose. I think she SP'd about $1.70 by the time she got away, but she looked a picture of health, and again, she was another one, such a dominant winner. And I think, well, it'd be interesting to see where she goes now, because there's a lot of options for her moving into the spring, and I'm sure Bjorn will map it out well for her. But yeah, I think a lot of people were cheering her home on Saturday. Wicklow, I think with the top weight, I was a little bit nervous, but I'm still super impressed with him. He got the job done. And then just a couple of others, I think, probably to follow out of. Petulant, I thought, did an enormous job to place after being trapped 3 wide and 4 wide throughout. So hard to beat, I think, next time, given better luck. An interesting one, and one that I don't think we necessarily forgot about in that race, but probably was overlooked to a certain extent because of Shades of Rose, was Rupertar, who ended up finishing 10th. So on paper, probably didn't look as good, but so only beat 3 home, but I think he's most certainly the hidden gem. Race wide in the rear before easy back and getting to the fence just before the turn, and just ran into a brick wall, was never out of second gear, had no luck. And I just think she'll be one to watch over the next couple of weeks.
Plenty to watch at the trials tomorrow as well. The likes of In the Congo, Fangirl. Anything else you've got your eye on, Ali?
Oh, there was a couple, actually. I had another one from the trials that I'd like to follow out of last Friday's, because there's just so many. It's hard to keep your eye across all of them, because there are so many good horses stepping out at the moment, whether it be their first trial or second trial back. But one that I really liked on Friday as well was actually Northern Beaches, who's a horse I've liked the whole way through. So he trialled at Rose Hill, trialled 3 back on the inner and travelled up really well. He never was let off the bridle and just looked to have oodles in the tank. So that was from Friday at Rose Hill, if anyone would like to follow him. But I love Benno. So Benno trialling tomorrow in that group trial at Randwick. That little grey for John O'Shea, who I thought was so unlucky in a couple of races. And, of course, in his grand final, which was the Derby, where he was second behind to get top 2.
Yeah, well, memorable Derby that was.
Yeah, no, it certainly was. I tell you what, Mido, we're only a month away from the spring carnival. Ali, how excited are you?
I'm so excited. It feels like spring. I'm actually in Melbourne at the moment. It feels like spring down here, I have to say, which I never thought I would say because it's bloody freezing. But, but certainly, with all these good horses stepping out, it really feels like you're ramping up now.
Looking forward to it, Ali. Thanks so much. Enjoy the week.
Thanks, guys.